I'm Jerwin Gabriel Santiago.
And I'm Elizabeth Wayne.
And we've never been wrong, ever. This week, May, December, and Showgirls.
Will they make it to heaven or hell?
We'll decide. Welcome to Rapture.
What are we doing tonight?
Oh my gosh, we impulse bought Dave Matthews Band tickets.
Yeah, we did.
It's gonna be so fucking crazy.
We're having the best day ever.
In that we planned a full day and then had to cut like two out of the three activities because we were like, there's simply not enough time for any of that.
We were like trying to schedule out our night and then we're like, oh, we gotta start like now.
Yeah, I'm like,
we should have started 10 minutes ago.
We should have been ready to go to the concert about an hour and a half ago.
And we were gonna go to the beach in the middle of all of it.
Somehow the beach right now is a really crazy place. I went to Hollywood Beach on Sunday and LOL, it was like Lollapalooza for gay guys.
Well, yeah, that's like 365 24/7 like January like 13th, like it's still like gay beach over there. You know what I mean?
Well, it was like the crowd that was there. If you really tuned in, you could hear just like the loud hum, the roar of a bunch of gay guys listening to like Kim Petras's new song.
Yeah. And that's like really scary, dude.
I mean, I was definitely scared. I'm like, no, I'm not going to say what I was going to say. I'm like, this is on the record. I love you gay guys. I love you gay guys, except for every single gay guy that I match with on Tinder who is the most boring person I've ever met in my entire life.
And, like, I'm not going to name names, but, like, some people out here are, they're not respecting, like a renowned musical artist. Like, getting to, like, experience her in person.
Yeah.
And just saying loud.
It was loud. Imagine going to a concert being like, I don't know, I didn't really like it, it was loud.
When some of us would have really, like, benefited. Hey.
I'm looking at you. You're really boring, but you're really hot, so.
Oh. Do you know where I went last night?
Wait, where?
Well, you do know where I went.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you went to one of the best places in the world.
Half Price Books meets AMC Theaters. And, yes, you can find Wonder if you know where to look.
Cathedrals everywhere if you just drive to the suburbs.
There, if you're about 0.5 miles from the Leaning Tower of Niles. It's the eighth wonder of the world over there.
It must be electric to just be like, I'm going to eat at a Chili's.
Well, and actually, we went to Half Price Books. I got Dave Matthews Crash. On CD. Yeah, Crash on CD. And the Trainspotting soundtrack.
Okay, it's easy smash. Smash to both.
Really. Yeah, because I was pre-gaming like Danny Boyle. Yeah, with more Danny Boyle.
More Danny Boyle.
Because I saw 28 Years Later. Half Price Books, Chili's, AMC.
That's like what America has going for it.
It was.
It's the only thing that works is like chain restaurant and commerce. And then
in a strip mall.
The arts. I mean, it has every single thing you would want. Food, drink.
Music.
Entertainment.
Laughter.
Yeah. Physical media.
mozzarella bricks at Chili's.
I, like, just know that whatever bowel movement you have in the next 24 hours is going to be detrimental to your health.
Well, I actually think it'll make me feel amazing.
You come back, where you're like, skinny
I'm
the fucking meal. 15
pounds skinnier. 15 pounds.
15. So you got the triple dipper. What's up?
No, we were kind of on a time crunch, so... Mm. We split mozzarella brick.
The fact that that's a unit of cheese is crazy. Like, the fact that we're, like, in America, it's, like, So I'm going to have the 10-pound beef ass and the brick of mozzarella cheese. And then
fried.
Oh, my gosh. Well, everything is, of course, fried. The beef ass is fried, too.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, maybe like a 128-ounce drink.
It was. I actually noticed specifically it was in like those like barrel mug.
A Stein.
A Stein. Yeah. Like Kyle got a Dr. Pepper. I only got water.
When you get soda and then the other person is like, can I just get water with lemon? Yeah. You're like, I've never felt bigger. Yeah. So you got the brick of mozzarella.
You got the brick of mozzarella and we split chicken tenders that were really gross. And it came with a side of mac and cheese. So I kind of just like had a mozzarella brick and a half, a few bites of mac and cheese. So like a lot of cheese up in here. Yeah. a few fries and like called it a day.
Whoa. So the chicken tenders were so bad you didn't even want to have one.
No.
That is so crazy. Mm-mm. I feel like Chili's is lauded for their chicken.
Not to me.
The chicken crispers. Just some of the most fabulous words of all time.
That's Chili's, no?
That's Chili's, okay. Yeah. Like, crispers. Mm-hmm. They really did PR on these things. We're like, we have to add an air of whimsy to our chicken.
And, yeah, it draws you in. Mm-hmm. They're not that crispy.
They're... Oh, was it crispy? Right.
Right. But marketing can fool anyone.
It works.
Yeah.
I would definitely like water if it was marketed to me better. Like, I would, like, probably drink it more often. Yeah, water is just kind of gross to me.
Yeah, they don't really need to market water.
Scenes should be in movies. Well, no, because, like, I think that water has this thing where it's like, well, if you don't have me, I'll die. Yeah. It's like a wife who's fed up. And she's just like, well, like, oh.
Yeah. Oh, so I'm fat.
Why don't you just kill yourself?
Yeah.
Why don't you just die?
So I'm a horrible mother.
Drop dead. For all I care, drop dead. Water is like, I don't even care. Waiting for the bus with her arms crossed. I don't even care.
That's actually when I was in getting my major in like advertising in college. That was like a classic ad 101 thing where they were like, and how do we market water? And we would do exercises where, like, you have to market water. And then, like, when you think about it, it's really not that hard to market water. Mm-hmm. You just make it Lux, you know?
I think the vessel is really what matters most. Like, the Fiji water bottle, that design, that technology that they've used there is really unparalleled.
Yeah.
I bought a Voss recently. Mm-hmm. A glass tube of water. Chilled.
Yep.
I'm basically... a billionaire. I own land.
I'm at Jeff Bezos and Lauren Sanchez's wedding as soon as I crack open a Voss.
It's fabulous.
Yeah.
And the fact that they can print on glass, I'm like,
is it?
What's better than this?
Is it printed on?
The word Voss is printed. So is the barcode. There's
That's
not
why it's $5.
I'm like, and the water doesn't even like taste that good.
No.
When people can taste water, I'm like, I feel like you're joking.
Actually, I do have a Dasani in my kitchen right now from AMC. Mm-hmm. Why Kyle got a Dasani and not a Smartwater? I don't know. It tastes like ass. Like, it actually tastes really bad.
The fun fact that I like telling people that's completely untrue and not I made up is that Dasani has the same amount of salt in it as a small fry from McDonald's. And they're like, are you serious? I'm like, no, but they do put salt in it to make you thirstier.
Is that true?
Dasani, yeah.
The thing is like, I would have, like, fallen for that had you told me, because I trust my friends implicitly.
I know. That's why I had to let you know that what I'm doing here is a ruse.
That's, like, one time Nunzio told me that, that there was, like, a chemical in... there was a chemical in paper...
That makes the frogs gay.
No, that makes you have to shit. That's why.
That makes you have to shit. Like,
why, when you go into a Barnes & Noble, you have to shit? And I believed him. at rip, at face, ad nauseum. I believed him. And he of course, like, went with it for, like, a really long time.
Years.
No, I cracked the code in, like, 10 minutes.
Okay. that it would be completely implausible that books were a biological warfare. Like, they were emitting fumes to make you shit.
I kept being like, are you serious? Are you serious? And he's like, you know how he is. He's like, yeah, it's true. Like, it's, I'm 100% serious. And I'm like, Nunzio, are you sure? Is that true? And, like, I think I just kind of wore him down to where he's like, no, love, like, that's not true.
Or it's actually like, I'm really afraid of what this can do to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The power of acting.
He's like, you're a little too easy.
Yeah, you're like, oh. Okay, sue me.
I trust my friends. Like,
lock me up.
Yeah.
If that's a crime, I should be in jail.
I actually have, like, tears in my eyes.
The last time that I shit my pants was in a Barnes & Noble.
And you talked about that briefly.
Yeah.
On pod.
Yeah.
Which Barnes & Noble?
It was the one in Oakbrook.
Okay. Oh.
It was like, you trust one fart, and then it's like you give a massive cookie.
What section were you in?
I actually was picking up a friend's Kafka. That's why I brought it up last time, yeah.
Oh, dude.
I mean, it was really, I was like, when we talk about the metamorphosis.
Mm-hmm. Were you a changed person after that?
I metamorphosized in that bathroom shore thing when I was having to, like, truly run my underwear through a sink.
No. I would have just thrown it. 9 a.m. Why were you at Oakbrook at 9 a.m.?
I was dropping someone off at work.
Oh.
Someone who shall not be another.
No, I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah, sorry, I'm still thinking about the paper. I used to, like, really eat paper.
Why?
Bored. OCD, maybe Pica-ish. Pica,
oh,
Pica,
yeah,
adjacent.
Yeah.
I definitely didn't have that because there's some really scary movies about Pica.
Like
movie
what?
Swallow.
I've never heard.
It's like a thriller, sort of like...
About Pica.
About Pica. Yeah, well, it's about, like, a woman who's being abused. And so she swallows things to try and get out of her abusive relationship.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah, she swallows, like... There's one time where she, like, swallows a battery. And she's like...
And it, like...
Yeah, like, they're doing an ultrasound because they're like, we have to see all of the things that you swallowed. And then they hold the, like, wand up. And she's like... Mm-hmm. Because the battery is reacting to the radio waves. Yeah. She is fierce.
Who was it?
I don't know. Somebody who looks like Jennifer Lawrence but isn't.
Okay. I think maybe I'm, like, imagining it, but, like, I feel like I've seen a trailer or something for that.
Yeah. It's a red background. She's got a bob and she's like...
Wait, yes. No. I know what you're talking about. It's a little, like, art housey, like, looking.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. It was filmed really beautifully.
Yeah.
I liked it.
Okay. Well, good to know there's, like Pica awareness movies out there.
I'm like, we need more representation in the Pica community.
Yeah. Sorry. Pica or Pica? Tyga.
Pica.
Uh-huh.
And then Pica is what Pikachu says. Pica Pica.
Pica Pica. Yum yum.
Yum yum. I'm like, we should make a song. Fuck this podcast right now. We should start singing.
I think we can make some money off of that.
I'm like, and that's copyrighted. That's going to be, that's my intellectual property.
Yes, I pee.
You pee?
Upper Peninsula? Word association,
like, yeah, we just go back and forth. Like, it's completely incoherent.
Yes, and.
Yes. We should play Zip Zap Zop.
Yeah. You start hitting the mic.
That would be so jarring. I'm like, we could be doing anything.
Mm-hmm. And we're using our free will
to
do this.
And we are building, we're constructing a reality by doing improv. I'm actually, like, going to go on a full tangent.
Telling
we
stories.
Can't.
Yeah.
Telling lies.
Tell me lies.
If improv isn't but telling lies, but also getting at the truth.
Sorry.
I got
a little distracted that was mold in there.
Oh, I hate that I learned about mold.
When?
There was a Brittany Murphy documentary, and they were like, she died because of black mold.
Dude.
I was like, no, she didn't. She died because of other more sinister things.
You think? Is that your truth?
I think, well, like, drugs and stuff, probably, right?
Oh, there's, like, a conspiracy that, like, her husband murdered her or something.
Yeah, this documentary was going through, like, all of the things that it could have been. Mm-hmm. And then, like, one of them was, like, black mold. And then I was, like, searching my apartment. Mm-hmm. It was when I was, like, still smoking weed. Mm-hmm. And I had one of those, like, insane coffees from Wake and Bakery. Where it's, yeah, like, where they, yeah, they put, like, a metric ton of weed in it.
Yeah,
and then,
yeah,
like, you're, like, ripping off caffeine and also a psychedelic drug.
And for, like, 2 hours because you're just sipping the coffee.
Yes, you're, yeah. And then it really hits you. And then I was watching it. And then I searched my entire apartment, mm-hmm, for molds.
Mm-hmm. Did you find any?
I don't know what to look for.
Oh.
I'll be honest. I was like, I thought it would just be like really apparent.
Yeah.
But like mold can look like anything.
You became aware of a problem and like didn't know how to fix it.
I was like, I couldn't even identify the problem, yeah, had there been one.
That's kind of scary.
I know.
Especially when you have like a gallon of weed-infused iced coffee, like, yeah, telling you that you're right, yeah, you know?
Well, because it's like, well, if anything can be, then it honestly got me to clean my apartment, which, mm-hmm, was low-key, like, maybe I should be more scared more often than that. It'd be better if my apartment was just, like, clean. I don't think we have enough hot dogs. I swear, after we watched that movie, I kept on doing a lisp. I legit couldn't stop doing the lisp for random things.
You really?
I'm, like, even, like... subduing myself right now, subduing myself, mm-hmm, because it is so satisfying to like just like hit that hard th sometimes,
yeah, and kind of hard,
yeah.
It's like when I am watching a lot of Love Island UK
and you slipped into it right there.
Ooh, what?
UK. And then you start talking British,
like, yeah, a little bit, like my inner dialogue turns British,
yeah,
yeah.
I mean, like, it's mirroring.
Mm-hmm.
And what is life if not
a mirror? A mirror.
Everything is a mirror.
Everything is romantic.
Oh.
Kinda, yeah.
Kind of harmonized there, low-key.
Okay, let's, like, bring out, like the mixing board.
I'm gonna, like, and the producer is, like...
Chicken, we got come that on.
Clean. We got that clean. Hot dog...
Hot, yeah, dog.
Doesn't it just feel good?
For
safe.
For safe.
It feels really good to just, ooh.
Just like, it is a little soothing.
Yeah. I don't know what, there must be something like regression, mm-hmm, regressive about it.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves there. But
because,
yeah.
Because, what did we watch?
We watched May December.
And Showgirls.
The seminal movies about exploitation,
gender dynamics,
yeah, two powerful women. Mm-hmm. What else is in these movies?
Like, kind of weird sex.
Super weird sex.
Yeah.
Some iconic sex, some really unwatchable sex.
I think both of these movies are about power.
Mm-hmm. Domination.
And those dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to give a little synopsis of May December?
Yeah, so May December is a movie by Todd Haynes starring Natalie Portman, Julianne Moore, and one sexy, and I'll do this very quietly, Smashington Williams, Charles Melton. It follows the story of Natalie Portman visiting a couple who was in the public eye for quite a big scandal. About statutory
bleep.
And we kind of see like this couple's dynamic, the power structure involved in Julianne Moore being 23 years older than Charles Melton, and them kind of consecrating their relationship while he was 13 and she was 36.
It's so crazy.
I know. And Natalie Portman is an actress doing research for a movie about Julianne Moore's character.
Mm-hmm. And this is based on a true story, mm-hmm, that happened. Mary Kay Letourneau and Billy Folau, I, mm-hmm, believe is how you pronounce it. Almost like exact situation that happened, but she was his teacher. She went to jail. She had a baby behind jail. They got married after, had two kids, mm-hmm, same in the movie. Kind of follows them like 20 years later, like what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's so about this moment in culture with like true crime and like making stuff about people's trauma, mm-hmm, and like reopening that wound for people.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to give a quick synopsis of Showgirls, if that's even possible?
Would I like anything more? So it is about, came out in 1995, directed by Paul Verhoeven, I think is how you pronounce it,
every,
and I'm not going to check it.
Every single time I see that name, I'm like, Paul Verhoeven.
1995, he had just come off of directing Basic Instinct. It was written by the same writer as that movie. Follows Elizabeth Berkley, who is still in her Saved by the Bell contract. just, you know, keep that in mind this whole time. And she plays Nomi, who is a, like, wandering soul that we follow as she enters the Las Vegas showgirls world. It kind of follows her trajectory from starting out as, like, topless dancer at this kind of seedy club to working her way up to being the headliner at, like, this kind of classier, kind of gorgeous showgirls review. And she is kind of clawing her way to the top. She has this weird kind of gay relationship with the current lead of the show, Crystal. She is with Kyle MacLachlan. She's giving insane line deliveries. And then it ends with her getting what she wants. She becomes the headliner of this show after pushing Crystal down the stairs.
One of the most iconic scenes ever is just that full thrust, and then ow. Some fucking, like, cartoon as, like, bonk noises.
And her friend Molly is brutally assaulted. Like, brutally, like, skip over it if you watch it. Like, it's really bad.
It's really upsetting.
And then it ends with her leaving Las Vegas and heading to Los Angeles. And this movie was widely considered one of the worst movies ever made when it came out, and it has now become a camp cult classic.
Yeah, it was one of the first movies to be screened in theaters with the NC-17 rating. The director did win both best director and worst director and worst movie at the Razzies, and accepted both awards. The very first director to accept those awards.
And you know what? He stood in his truth.
I like that he was just like, you know what? Fine. You guys hated it. I fucking love this movie. His interviews are so funny.
I know.
Because they're like, damn, you really, really took this movie very seriously. And that's why we're able to do this.
You
had a lisp.
Oh my God. You took this movie.
I'm literally falling into it. Yeah, he gives some really, really funny interviews. He's like, I was studying the greats for this movie. And then you get to the pool fucking scene and you're like, you know what? It must make an incredible filmmaker to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, Elizabeth Berkley. I'm so scared.
And I gotta say, like, I was a little bit of a Saved by the Bell head in, like, my tween teen years. And so it was kind of interesting seeing her in this role. This was my second time watching this.
Me too.
And she was only 22 when she did this.
That's impressive.
So also keep that in mind.
And she's so athletic.
She's so athletic. She's so gorgeous.
She is so pretty. There's so many reviews where it's like, her pouty-eyed, open-mouth, beautiful face acting only takes her so far. And I would actually tend to disagree. It sells the movie to me how, like, stunning. Yeah. And, like, all of the long silences where she's just, like, staring. I'm okay, it would only work if she was that beautiful.
Well, this is a movie that ultimately is following a woman with borderline personality disorder.
Correct.
And, because, like, the whole thing, if you haven't seen it, it's, like, the acting is so over the top, but kind of just, like, her. Like, it's kind of only her that's, like, being crazy.
Yeah. Everybody else has, like, an air of, like, reality or at least just, like, ambiguity to them. Like, they're, like, more restrained, which makes her look extra crazy.
Yeah. Like her, she meets this girl, Molly, and Molly asks her where she's from, and she says, different places!
While throwing an entire order of large fries around a restaurant. It's like, that choice itself, I'm like, that is so beautiful. Yeah. Like, that's to me a vaudevillian performance. Mm-hmm. She also just has this addiction to running into traffic. Like, I'm pretty sure she runs in front of about 5 cars over the course of 2 hours.
Oh, yeah. And eats a lot of delicious burgers.
Wait, we have got to talk about the burger.
Dude.
We had to pause the movie and be like, should we get burgers?
Yeah.
It was like...
And we didn't, ultimately.
Because we were showing restraint.
Yeah.
And yeah. Wow, that burger looks so good.
So good.
Like, what would be more fun than eating a burger in a convertible with some guy that you don't care who, if he lives or dies?
But he, like, bailed you out of jail and, like, bought a burger.
Yeah, I mean, after truly kicking him in the nuts, getting him fired mm-hmm. from 3 separate jobs, he's still like, will you hang out with me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, I think that this is a really, like, fun pairing because... They're kind of like inverses of each other, but they're both like really, really high on the dramatics of it all, because the glitz and glamour of Las Vegas pairs really well with kind of the subdued interiors of May December, but they both hold all of this like melodramatic power stories within them. And they follow these two characters, these two sets of characters that just have all of this like tension about like who's going to be on top, or like, it's always so well acted when the two stars of the movie are together.
In May, December.
And I think with Showgirls, Crystal and Nomi, mm-hmm. like, such a good pairing.
Yeah. Yeah, there's this like kind of revisiting of Showgirls in Collider, and the writer Emma Keeley says that Crystal yearns for Nomi. Nomi yearns for Crystal's position. They are all just looking at each other, wanting different things. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like that's also really apparent in May, December. In an interview with Damon Wise, Natalie Portman says, I think it's so much about these two women vying for narrative dominance, whose version of the story gets to be told. They end up using Joe as a pawn to win. And I think that between the dynamics of Crystal and Nomi, like, clawing your way to the top, doing whatever you can to win, is also mirrored between, like, these two women who are like, I want this version of the story told.
Yeah.
And it all deals with, like, artifice and power and just, like, really doing anything, not letting anything stop in your way. Like, in May, December, when she just kind of, like, rampages through this family's, like, really important mm-hmm. weekend mm-hmm. So she can, like, get her research for the movie. And the same where Nomi will just sabotage mm-hmm. or, like, do anything to be the headliner.
Yeah. I think May, December kind of... It's layered, and it peels back those layers as the movie goes on. And Showgirls, like, doesn't really do that. It kind of just shows you what it is from yeah. the beginning. Mm-hmm. But it's both, it's a different approach to reveal character motivations. In May, December, it's very much the first act of the movie is you're kind of agreeing with what is being presented to you. Like, this is an actress following this family to study them.
Mm-hmm.
And then as it kind of gets into it a little bit more, you realize, oh no, Natalie Portman is just as crazy as Julianne Moore's character. And mm-hmm. they are both like in this sparring match with each other, trying to like outdo each other, all the while kicking Charles Melton like in the head. You know yeah. what I mean?
I mean, like, I love that Julianne Moore's entire life is like she's acting. Like, she tries to keep all these appearances up, and she wants to have this like constructed... She constructs a vision of herself and her life that she must portray to people, and she won't accept any other version of it. This inverse thing in Natalie Portman is like, I want to like see the real parts of you. Like, I want to see the truth behind this character that I will be playing. And they're both like really just like mascots for different forms of artifice. And they are directly in tension with each other, because wanting to strip back this artifice that Julianne Moore's character constructs is Natalie Portman's whole job. So they're like, they're really good rivals to have for each other. Yeah. But they end up being like the same person mm-hmm. at the end of the day mm-hmm. because they will control everything that they can.
Yeah.
Or, like, they'll do anything that they can to get what they want.
Yeah. At the expense of everyone else around them.
Mm-hmm.
There's this quote from the Substack, Utterly Vapid. The house that this all takes place in is a mausoleum. It's light and airy and tastefully decorated. A lovely kitchen leading out to a nice deck in a big backyard. A top floor window that leads out to a roof used as a regular hangout spot by the kids and husband. Returning to Basinger, she describes the importance of spaces and the concept of space within the woman's film. And this is decidedly Gracie's home, not her husband's. Not even just the house, but the yard, the town, and the life. A clean suburban tomb where the family that was built on one boy's pain and suffering is hidden away.
Yeah, I really love Todd Haynes's work with interiors. Like, all of his movies have, like, such well-planned, like, production design. And I feel like this movie, set in the suburbs, everything like that, is a really good backdrop for, like, the story that Gracie wants to conceal about Charles Melton. And I really love that scene about on the roof.
Oh, my God.
Where it's, like, kind of his, like, only space where he can have emotions. Like, the whole movie, he's kind of, like, suppressing them the entire time, and that's the one, like, big emotional break when he starts crying to his son. Like, that roof is his only little, like, reprieve from the prison that pretty much she constructs in the rest of the house. And when he, like, almost falls off, there's something, like, really poetic about that roof.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's still attached to the house. It's still part of the house, but it's also outside of the house, and like, it's kind of like his whole thing with, like, the butterflies.
Yeah.
Where the butterfly is coming out of its chrysalis, but then it's coming out into a cage still. Mm-hmm. Like, someone else has to let it free for it to truly be able to, like, live its next phase of its life.
Yeah. Though its physical metamorphosis happened, the cage acts like Charles Melton being like, I'm still the 13-year-old boy, but I'm in a 36-year-old man's body.
His acting in this, dude, the way he, like, physically moves in the movie, like, speaks, he's kind of, like, shriveled and shrunken, like a 13-year-old.
Yeah.
In a 36-year-old's body.
Yeah.
It's like, really amazing work. Acting.
And he gained 40 pounds for the role, too. I'm like, that is dedication that we don't see.
No.
To anyone. I'm like, everyone's getting on Ozempic. I'm like, you're going to be in The Whale, girl. You put on some fucking pounds. Like, that is true dedication. And I feel like when this movie first came out, we were like, he's robbed. Because that year, the Oscars didn't fucking...
It was The Whale.
No, but for... supporting actor, wasn't it fucking Robert Downey Jr.?
It was.
Okay, we won't get into it. No. Because my blood is boiling. Because I don't care about him. He should have won for Iron Man, and that's it. Iron Man 3, specifically, the worst one. Yeah, I think that his performance is so incredible. I was reading stuff about Natalie Portman and Julianne Moore's kind of set dynamic, and it was so cool because Julianne Moore, being like the really, really talented actress she is, she made all these choices for Gracie. So then Natalie Portman's character would have, like, concrete things to latch onto, like the lisp. Also, like, the way that she just moves her hand and stuff, like, was very, very intentional. So there would be a true metamorphosis for Natalie Portman's character at the end, too. And I feel like all of those scenes where they're in mirrors together, like, they compound into that final scene where Julianne Moore puts the makeup onto Natalie Portman to be like, you have turned into me.
Yeah.
All of those mirror scenes are just so beautifully shot.
Yeah, yeah. It was, like, a real great creative choice by Todd Haynes.
Yeah, for a bunch of those mirror scenes, too, I read in an interview that that same Natalie Portman interview, they would put the camera in front of them, and then there would be no mirror behind them. There would just be points marked with painter's tape to say, this is where you would be in a mirror, this is where you would be in a mirror. And they had to act on that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just like, what an incredible performance from both of them.
Yeah.
That they weren't even, like, really seeing each other, but they were, like, becoming each other through these, like, portals of the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
It was such a good, like, cinematographic choice.
No, I feel like all the choices in May, December were super intentional. Like, the music, mm-hmm. the kind of making it like a melodrama. Like, it's funny. It's a funny movie.
Yeah. It's a comedy about something really serious.
Mm-hmm. Because serious moments are funny.
Yeah. Like, there's an air of comedy about it because, like, life is funny. Even the worst things in life are funny.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow. But, like, it's never a joke. Like, they treat the subject matter really, really carefully.
Yeah.
And it's, like, more making fun of the perversion of the media and, like, all of these forces that come into people's life and, like, extracts their trauma or, like, minds them of their worst moments so then they can, like, sensationalize it on TV.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to read this quote by... this is from Interview Magazine. The interview's by Jake Nevins, and it's with Todd Haynes. When describing Natalie Portman's character, he says, "Elizabeth, we discover, is not so much an audience surrogate as she is a ruthlessly extractive force for whom the conventions of method acting, she works in service of the truth," she tells a room of acting students, "serves as an excuse to further destabilize Gracie and Joe's lopsided partnership and rip open old wounds." So instead of making a piece of art that, like, wishes to portray it, really what she is doing with her impact
mm-hmm.
in this movie is just, like, re-traumatizing.
Yeah.
And
for what? A fucking Lifetime movie.
Her holding the snake is gonna be, that's top five jokes of all time.
That reveal at the end, like, if you haven't seen it, like, the closing scene is Natalie Portman on set of the movie that she was researching for, and you find out that what she had portrayed as kind of, like, high-level, kind of Oscar-baity film is actually a cheap, like, ripped from, tabloid
mm-hmm.
Lifetime movie.
Yeah.
Kind of role.
It's so funny because she's doing research that's like she's watching a Lifetime movie in the middle of the film and she's like, "We're not making that." And then for that to be the Chekhov's gun where they're just like actually recreating a horrible straight to TV movie, mm-hmm.
like pornographic-esque. Yeah, like
it's gotta be "I've got your nose," number one joke, and then this one, number two, this reveal, this 2 hour long reveal.
It was the first time I watched it. I was like, "Hello?"
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that's such a testament to how well this was written because, yeah, the whole first act, there's all those funny lines, the hot dog line,
mm-hmm.
All of those like long dramatic pauses. Like, they want to set up that this is a funny movie, but it's not trying to make fun of the subject matter.
Yeah.
It's making fun of something larger. And that's, like, with all the stylistic choices, it's, like, making fun of the media more than mm-hmm. it's making fun of, like, these stories or, like...
And the consumer, mm-hmm. I think. It's kind of making fun of us.
Yeah.
You know?
Kind of got our ass.
Like, a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting meditation on, like, what happens when these, like, tabloid commodities are discarded with.
Mm-hmm.
And that the emptiness that comes with that, it, like, not only is it, and that's really shown in, like, Charles Melton's character.
Mm-hmm.
And he is so hollow and empty
mm-hmm.
and, like, a shell of a person. And no one takes that seriously
mm-hmm.
in his life. Like, no one acknowledges that because there's, like, this, like, facade.
Mm-hmm. That he must maintain.
Yes. That not only his family, his wife is, like, doing, but, like, the entire town they live in is, mm-hmm. like, feeding into her delusions,
yeah.
you know?
Like, when she gets the orders for her, like, bakery stuff,
mm-hmm.
and it's, like, it's all the same people because they're all just playing into her charade.
Yeah.
Like, he knows these things. And I also feel like when Natalie Portman, when they finally have sex together, mm-hmm. Natalie Portman and Charles Melton, and then she kind of discards of him pretty quickly, you get to rewatch what it's like for him to be taken advantage of and, like, how at every single turn he's been discarded.
Yeah.
And he just holds it with, like, such class as an actor. Like, it's,
yeah.
like, so subtle, but you can just really, really feel how this person has been completely swept under the table.
Mm-hmm. There's another quote from that Utterly Vapid Substack. And she says that Portman plays the shallow sympathy she has toward her subjects so well. The vulgarity of her whole endeavor. Her character has sex with Joe, so she will have sex with him. For Joe, it's the first time in his adult life that he's acted on sexual urges outside of the confines of a marriage built on taking advantage of his budding manhood. It was really heartbreaking to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's just always that, like, low hum, and the pacing of the movie, like, really, like, peels back the layers, and, like, you really start seeing Natalie Portman and Julianne Moore's characters just become, like, scarier and scarier. Mm-hmm. It's, like, low-key a horror movie.
No, they're, like, morphing into, like, in one being.
It's the reverse Substance.
Yeah.
It's like, and it's just as much as a body horror, because we have to talk about the mugshot. I'm like, pause this, look up Gracie, Julianne Moore's character's mugshot from this movie. Mm-hmm. The hair they use is fucking scarier than anything I saw in The Substance. Straight up.
The roots coming down to probably like her ear, the wig that she's wearing, and the clip and bang clip to the wig.
And the clip and bang is, of course, four separate hairs. Just wisps. Like individual strands of hair. Yeah, that I could.
It's like a real horror.
It's like that. That's scary because that's walking around for real. Yeah. And then. Yeah. Not they even to mention what she, not even mentioning what she did, like like just on first look you're like, whoa, and then you learn her story and you're like, this got so dark so quickly. Yeah,
and I think that's something similar with Showgirls is like this whole idea of it taking place in Las Vegas, which is to me the most interesting place in the world.
It's my favorite city in the world for sure.
And for what? A multitude of reasons.
I mean, the list goes on, but just the fact that it's, like, so glitz, but also so trash. It's, like, it holds the highest and lowest of every single emotion across the gamut. Like,
and
it's
a darkness running underneath the whole thing.
Then everything is drenched in neon. You know what I mean? Like, it's always buzzing. It's always going. People are there celebrating, having the best days of their lives.
And the worst days of their lives.
And the worst days of their lives.
Like, trying to achieve this idea of, like, wealth and, you know, like, excess and the fact that it is in the desert that no one should be living in is, like, there's this quote from Futurist Letters by Nathan Eddington on Substack. And it says, within the realm of mystical geography, Florida is America's id and California is America's superego. Both sun poisoned states represent liminal spaces in our minds, dreamlands filled with dreamers. Florida is our deepest libidinal urges realized. And
it's like, I'm just finding out that my friend doesn't know the word libido.
It's libidinal.
Libidinal, yeah.
And she demands satisfaction immediately, to hell with the consequences. California is the end of the frontier, literally, and in many ways the end of America. I posit that Nevada, and specifically Las Vegas, is the ego. Baudelaire wrote that Disneyland is the real America and America is the fake America. This is a very intuitive concept for making sense of our hyper-reality, our worsening ability to discern what is fake and what is real. However, it's clear that Las Vegas is just America. It is both very fake and very real.
I love the psychological read of the geography of America.
Yeah.
That is so fucking fierce. And yeah, Las Vegas kind of being... It's not the direct middle, but it is, like, psychologically in the middle of those two. Because you do watch everybody, like, you're watching, like, people have ego death every single day there, but then refusing to change, unless it means getting higher up on the ladder. And, like, Nomi, well, first of all, we've got to say, one of the best names in movie history. I know you know me.
Because you don't know me.
You don't know me? I'm Nomi.
Different places.
Showgirls, from the same article, Showgirls' intelligence can be seen as a reflection of this incongruous American ego. They withdraw from their own disgust of themselves. In this way, Showgirls is like Vegas. It shows you a nature beyond what the superego and id can understand. It shows you who you are, your persona, and face to the world around you.
Yeah. I think Vegas is America. And I think Nomi is, like, trying to achieve the American dream. Mm-hmm. And does she succeed? Kinda.
Yeah, she actually gets her, like, wildest dreams fulfilled. I mean, like, if I even got one night with Kyle MacLachlan, I'd be like, well, I've made it. But then, like, she realizes that as you keep ascending, there's a point where, like, you do climax, mm-hmm. and then things just get worse. Mm-hmm. She, like, gets all of her dreams fulfilled and then realizes the consequences of her success. Mm-hmm. Like, her literal best friend is in the hospital because of the situations that she put her in.
Yeah.
Like, all of these toxic forces of fame are now all, like, falling onto her.
Yeah, she's, like, seeing the consequences of her actions. Mm-hmm. And the tone of this movie is so odd.
I mean, yeah, it's completely inconsistent, but in the same way, it all just makes sense together.
Yeah.
Like, when you piece it all together, you're like, by the way, the logic that he created about Las Vegas, like, the world building, mm-hmm. you could say that mm-hmm. he did, makes a lot of sense. Like, it's just yeah. this, like, it's over-exaggerated, in-your-face thing. That's also, like, why, like, Nomi's acting that way, because she's becoming more and more like Vegas mm-hmm. all throughout the movie.
Mm-hmm. It brings out the worst in you, mm-hmm. you know? And I feel like I'm on like a personal mission to clear Elizabeth Berkley's name.
And this is the platform to do
so. This is the platform to do it. So the original reviews of this movie were obviously horrible. And this is from the New York Times, like, original 1995 review by Janet Maslin. And it says, she said, the absence of both drama and eroticism turns Showgirls into a bare-butted boar. With the open mouth, vacant-eyed look of an inflatable party doll, Ms. Berkley should have been well-suited to a film that treats its heroine like a shiny new toy. But she has trouble even dancing alluringly in stiffly choreographed production numbers that suggest Michael Jackson videos and Oscar night kitsch, just as she has trouble repeatedly insisting, I am not a whore.
They dog on this girl.
Dude, bad.
They dog on her too much, dude.
Someone, like, re-examined the movie, like, 25 years later. And they said, when asked where she's from, she snaps back like a petulant 16-year-old screaming at her mom, different places! To me, this is a comic bit, every bit as inspired as Paul Rudd picking up the plate and fork in Wet Hot American Summer.
I'm like, and that is true classic comedy.
No,
like, vaudevillian level.
I think so.
Yeah. I mean, she's clowning. She really is. She's paying homage to mm-hmm. the most basic levels of comedy.
Yeah, it's like physical, yeah. emotional.
And everything at 100, mm-hmm. 110 even.
Yes. And so here's the thing is, she was clowned on this performance. Like, her agent dropped her after this movie because it did so bad. And she was not able to, like, get another one for a really long time. Like, it tanked her career. Yeah. And you know why? It's because the director told her to act like that, okay?
Yes.
He told her to go to 100, and he told everyone else to keep it normal, right? Yeah. So she looks fucking crazy. And this is an interview he did with Rolling Stone in 2015 for the 20-year anniversary of this. And he said, people have, of course, criticized her for being over the top in her performance. Most of that comes from me. I pushed it in that direction. Good or not good, I was the one who asked her to exaggerate everything, every move, because that was the element of style that I thought would work for the movie. And under that I wrote, he admits it.
Oh, so you admit it.
So you admit it.
I mean, like, it is crazy that she got blamed for that performance when it's, like, mostly an actor is, like, listening to what the director mm-hmm. says across the board. Mm-hmm. Like, to be fair, in May, December, the actresses really brought a lot of stuff to those roles. She executed exactly his vision.
She did. Like,
and it's
fully.
Her fault. It's her fault that the movie was bad. I think it made the movie
I don't
want to
hear it.
I don't want to fucking hear that. And 20 years later, the sorry could not come later.
Mm-hmm. Also, dude, I need a piece of cheese. I'm like...
not the mouse I'm getting, behavior.
I'm getting a little, like...
tired.
No, I can feel my
blood sugar drop.
Dropping. Sorry.
Some cheese. Man, if you give a bitch a cookie...
I need cheese.
Oh my gosh, I... running to the fridge. Need cheese. What did we just talk about?
I was trying to clear.
Oh. I'm like, you need to get that clean audio of the chomp. Oh my god.
I was trying to clear Elizabeth Berkley's good name.
I mean, yes, okay.
Sorry.
I'm just watching. Must be nice. I have, like, the biggest breakfast, too. I'm like, maybe I'll just get an ice water at dinner. And then have 14 beers at Northerly Island.
Oh, God. Oh, I'm done. What is happening to me?
I'm like...
Ow.
I cannot witness. You have, like, a full, like... You swallowed it, but it was down the entirely wrong pipe or something?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I hate those swallows. Mm-hmm. Give me a beat. And I mean, we are two women who will go to bat for Elizabeth Berkley any day she needs it. Mm-hmm. I actually don't know what she's done in her personal life or if there's any reason for us to not like her. I'll rescind this. But I will defend her performance in Showgirls till the day I die.
Yeah. It's kind of giving, like, most beautiful woman in the world.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. She, were you telling me this, but they're, like, on set dynamic, her and Gina Gershon was, like, genuinely what the movie
like kind of
was about. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, they kind of hated each other.
Yeah. That on set dynamic must have been crazy.
Yeah. And the director said he kind of fed into it because he thought he gave them a better performance. And I'm like, I think you're the common denominator of being the problem here.
Yeah. I'm like, well, you're a pervert that wants to watch women fight on and off screen. So, if your name's Paul, you know what? Sit your white ass down and listen to our podcast.
If you're Dutch Paul.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Listen down and, like...
listen down. Scratch that. Reverse it.
Scratch that. Reverse it.
Like, what is going on?
I don't know. I'm derailing it. I'm hot.
I don't know what's happening. I'm, like, drenched in sweat. What's going on in here? Okay. From that Nathan guy's Futurist Letters Substack, he says, in America, your citizenship is directly tied to how much power you can wield over others. In other words, money. Every scene in Showgirls shows that how much power you have... Every scene of Showgirls shows that how much of a person you are in this country, how much true citizenship you have, is tied to your ability to dominate others, and how money is the blood of the demonic force that allows you to curse other humans in this realm. Wow, he really, like, snapped.
He's kind of tearing it
up. It became magical at the end. I'm like, that is such a good encapsulation of the heart of the plot of Showgirls.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that force of domination also is just, like, the subtle thing that's running through May, December. I got this point now. In both movies, you watch, like, the consequences of that domination. Like, mm-hmm. Gracie's initial domination that we don't see but we know about. And as it's, like, slowly revealed, you're like, wow, like, the way that she wielded power over Charles Melton's character, you see the consequence of that. Mm-hmm. And then, like, in Showgirls, when she finally does anything to get to the top, she realizes, like, how much damage is done to, like, the people in her life.
Yeah.
And though Showgirls is really, like, over the top and in your face with it, I feel like that pairs really well with May December's kind of, like, slow burn, like, the subtext of everything. Mm-hmm. The, like, the most shocking moments are the quietest moments in that movie.
It's, like, what's not being said. Mm-hmm. And Showgirls says everything.
Mm-hmm. It over-communicates. Yeah.
And there's really no character development in Showgirls, but the entire premise of May December is, again, like this onion peeling mm-hmm. back layers of these characters to where they are almost completely different than you thought they were at the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, these movies are kind of yin-yang, like, yeah. of each other.
In that same way that, they make a full circle, I feel like with the future that you can imply from both of them, it's like, Nomi is going to go to Los Angeles and probably just do this all over again, right? It's a cycle. And then you're also watching May December, and when you finally see that horrible movie getting made, you're like, so basically this is going to be cyclical for Charles Melton's character too, is somebody is going to keep coming into their lives and like reopening those wounds. Mm-hmm. And they're both movies about this like cyclical force of like domination, control, that consequence,
yeah.
and like not really learning from it.
And like artifice, like there's yeah. a level of artifice over both of these movies mm-hmm. that inhibits the characters from mm-hmm. being able to achieve what would make them happy, mm-hmm. you know. But then Julianne Moore and Natalie Portman especially, like, they're kind of artificial to their core. Mm-hmm. That's why they're kind of mirroring each other, because yeah. it's easy for them to pick up on who they see that in each other, mm-hmm. and it's easy to draw that out of each other.
Yeah. I think about every single time she's like on the phone with whoever she's dating.
That's when she said the 13-year-old wasn't sexy enough?
Literally, like, in those scenes, that's the only time that you kind of see that Elizabeth's character out of context of, like, her learning for this role. Like, that's the type of person that she is. Like, the only details that you get about who she is at her core is how she dresses, how she keeps her hotel room, and, like, how she speaks to characters that aren't mm-hmm. related to the movie. It's, like, so interesting. Like you said, like, it's all the stuff that's, like, not said mm-hmm. that, like, makes up her character.
Yeah, like, you kind of understand that she's having an affair with the director of this, like, Lifetime movie. Mm-hmm. And it's everything she does, I'm like, girl, you don't need to, like, do all that. You know, mm-hmm. you don't need to, like, be sleeping with the director, again, of a Lifetime movie.
Yeah.
Like, why? Yeah. Why are you doing this? You know? They're both just about how people use and abuse each other mm-hmm. to get to, like, an end goal that still won't make them happy mm-hmm. by doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, one's very quiet. May December is very quiet. It's Showgirls in your face, loud, mm-hmm. like, over the top. But still has kind of a heart to it.
Yeah.
You know?
You really feel for Molly's character. Mm-hmm. You really feel for Kyle MacLachlan. But maybe in your pussy. You know what I mean?
I wouldn't say you even really feel for Nomi.
There are times where you do see her getting, like, truly abused by the system. Like, when the dance director is like, put this ice cube on your nipples because your boobs suck or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then, like, when they make her, like, dance on that boat, like, you do see her, like, that, like, childlike thing where you're like, I want to protect you from this world, but then she's just, like, clawing her way to the top no matter what.
It
is hard to, like, really feel for her, but she's
a kind-hearted person at the end of the day.
Yeah, every single time she runs in front of a car, I'm like, it would suck if you got hit by a car. So that's at least a layer of love to have.
Yeah.
Oh, the other thing that I wanted to bring up between these two movies was their, like, relationship to camp. Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of the online conversation when I was researching these two films and, like, what the culture was saying was very easy to consider Showgirls kind of a camp classic because it follows that kind of arc of, like, this is trash and that kind of thing. But I love the debate about whether May December is camp mm-hmm. because when I first watched it, I was like, this is just a funny movie that pulls on melodrama and, like, other genres. But then when I heard a Todd Haynes interview, he was like, I did not intend for this movie to be campy. Like, we had never had that intention. And I was like, oh, no, that kind of makes it campy.
I think I would classify it more as a melodrama. Mm-hmm. I think it has campy elements to it. But I think it's a little too heartfelt, maybe, to be, like, 100%, like, camp classic.
Yeah, you know? I agree. I love that kind of, like, proximity to the conversation of camp that both of these movies share.
It's a movie that I think you can tell that Todd Haynes loves women, you know?
Yes, yes.
And and coming from, like, the lens of a gay man telling this story about women, I think was perfect for this. I think it even would have been different had a woman directed it.
Yeah, even if the writer directed it. Yeah.
I don't know if it would have necessarily had those funny elements to it as much. Like, I don't really know how to explain it, but, like, having that eye, like, from, like, a gay man who said, like, in a couple of interviews that we read that he loves these, like, over-the-top female actresses, but he also, like, he loves his mom and his sister and his producing partner that's, like, his best friend. Like, he just has an appreciation for women.
Yeah.
And you can tell.
Yeah, like, he loves the, like, high highs and low lows. Like, he doesn't just love women as icons. He's like, I love them in every single form that they take. And, like, that's also why the movie ends in this way where it's, like, it's not telling you what to think about the subject matter. It's, like, truly presenting you all of these scenarios with these different characters just, like, doing really bad stuff to each other.
It's a movie that I think benefits from multiple viewings and that you can find something new in every viewing. I mean, Charles Melton's character is just tragic from top to bottom, and there's really no resolution for him. You don't know if he's gonna leave her or what's gonna happen. You can hope that he will, but, like, there's really nothing to say that that will happen, you know?
Yeah.
Just like in Showgirls, there's nothing to say that, like, Nomi will create a better life for herself in LA, you know?
She becomes a nurse. She should become a first responder.
She should. She has the, actually, the exact opposite temperament for it.
Yeah, it's Showgirls 2, Coalition Building Girls. She, like, actually does, like, a complete 180 and she's perfect.
Yeah.
I would love.
Well, you know what that means.
Oh my gosh, that sound.
It's time for Heaven or Hell.
Okay, Elizabeth, I've got to give you this first one. Heaven or Hell, Kyle MacLachlan.
You know that's going to be Heaven. I think even a tier above Heaven.
I think that he might be, when we get there, of course, he might be what God looks like.
I think he'll welcome us into the pearly gates.
And every single version of Kyle MacLachlan, Twin Peaks, overcompensating, really every single time he's hot.
Yeah. That's not even a question.
That was never on the table for the
Jerwin, what about Charles Melton gaining 40 pounds for this role?
Once again, I have to say the dedication is so good, and I think that he looks so fucking hot in this movie.
Yeah, he looks fantastic.
Love a guy. More guys with bellies. Just gonna have to say it right now. If you have abs, get the fuck out of my face. Okay, Elizabeth, Susan Sontag, someone else say notes on camp.
You know what? I'm going to give the essay itself Heaven, and then I'm going to give the celebrities' inability to interpret it correctly for the 2019 Met Gala Hell.
That is Hell. There was a demonic and evil portal opened that day.
It opened something. Yeah. The world was not the same after that. Drewin, what about eating puppy chow?
You know what? That's Hell to me, but that scene is so iconic. Where they're just, like, splashing each other with the champagne in the middle of Caesar's Palace. I'm like, that was fun, but go to Hell.
Yeah.
Elizabeth, what about slipping on monkey shit?
Funny to watch, bad to experience, so I'll give that Hell.
I would definitely agree with you.
Drewin, what about Henrietta Mama Bazoom?
Okay, the most iconic character that we literally didn't even mention one time. Her insane sight gag with her boobs. She I want her to play my mom in my overcompensating.
Yeah. Yeah. That is just perfect.
I mean, we have to give it up for every single character actress in any movie.
Who's ever held it down.
Yeah. You are doing the Lord's work, so welcome to heaven.
And we see you.
Yeah.
Well,
this was so fun. Yeah. I hope that you all do watch these movies back to back. It's a 4-hour time commitment, but I will say you will leave changed. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks.
If you'd like to support our podcast, you can leave a rating. You can leave us a review on your platform.
Follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Rapture the Pod.
And
yeah,
we'll see you later.
Bye.